CliffCentral.com.
Okay, good morning, everybody. We're here on a Monday. What was that, though? It's like a shrug that you gave with your shoulders. So, yeah, what's happening with you?
We couldn't hear anything on our side.
You couldn't hear what?
It was a very long silence.
Oh, you couldn't hear any music or anything?
Yeah, no.
No, that's annoying. I thought
We thought that you decided to take the day off and just look into the screen and not talk.
Yeah, I mean, you know. Listen, if there was ever a Monday to take off, I feel like it should be this one. I mean, it's just like so much death over the weekend. Just such a...
Oh, my gosh.
You know what I mean? It's like four people whose deaths I really did not want to contemplate all happening in quick succession. So, I mean, I hate starting the show with something depressing and miserable, but yeah, you've got to face up and deal with these things, I suppose. So we've got, on Friday, we obviously spoke about DMX. In fact, we spoke of him all of last week, and he was probably one of my favorite rappers, my second most favorite rapper. And, you know, Biggie, a Notorious B.I.G.
Oh.
Yeah. So I watched some videos. Here we go. Sorry about that. Jesus.
What's more so than I watched, good sneeze?
No, I watched some videos of DMX and his concerts and some of the music videos. And, you know, I had like a kind of a retrospective of his on Friday. And I felt pretty upset and cut up about that. Then, of course, Friday morning, not long after we'd finished the show, I heard about Prince Philip. And that upset me because I honestly, there are not a lot of people in the world that I really, really liked. Just everything about this guy was just precisely what I thought the best of humanity was. You know, he was this very dignified, very dutiful, very sensible. He was the last of a kind of man that you just don't get anymore. And I was actually much more upset than I thought I would be. Ended up spending a lot of Friday and even much of Saturday kind of watching the coverage, which was really, I mean, in some places very, very good. Like, you know, that they produce these packages at these TV channels, and we even used to have standby packages in radio of what we would play out if someone died. And the Prince Philip stuff was really good. I mean, it gave you this incredible background and this really detailed history of the man and kind of where he came from and what he'd lived through and what he did in his life. And you just don't get, you don't get men like that anymore. You don't get men who survived the kinds of things that he did in his childhood and then went to war and fought the Nazis and, you know, went to England basically with no money and no family. He was more or less abandoned. And then ends up marrying the Queen, you know. It's just the most incredible, most incredible story. And what an incredible human being, just tough as nails. I've mentioned before, and I think I wrote about it in my book, that I had met him. And on one of the occasions that I met him, he just to me demonstrated the kind of unbelievable skill with people that someone who had spent every day greeting strangers the way he did, was just so at ease with people. There was never a moment where Prince Philip wasn't the most confident man in the room. And I'll share that story later.
And it's a kind of confidence.
Oh, so yeah, just unbelievable.
Yeah, you don't have to be the loudest in the room. You don't have to. There's a self assurance there, unlike anything else. And it seems like an odd observation that I got over the weekend, but with all of this coverage, I thought, I've never heard him speak so much. Because in my time, or from my perspective, he was always a step or two behind the Queen.
Right.
And in these later years where he wasn't doing as many engagements, he wasn't really speaking. I was like, oh, I actually hadn't heard his voice. I actually hadn't heard his opinions like this. So interesting.
You've got to remember, this guy was so modern in the monarchy. I mean, he did more to push the monarchy forward into the 21st century than anyone else. you know, he insisted that, for example, they rearrange all of the royal residences because they were just they were the same as they had been for 200 years. And he said, look, we need, you know, modern forms of communication. We need modern staff requirements. We need to figure out how we can get the kitchens closer to the places that we eat because food's always bloody cold. The houses themselves were cold. He didn't like any of the stuffiness. And everybody looks at him now and we think of him as being this representative of an era gone by, but he was the most modern guy in the royal family for a very long time. And it's largely due to him, as much as it is the Queen. The two of them have kept that institution valuable and relevant. I mean, Sia, I know you love the whole idea of the royal family and you're deeply into it. Your mother was a massive fan of them as well. And it wouldn't have been as interesting or as successful as it is unless he'd been there. So a real sense of loss there. And then in quick succession, you know, Dr. Cindy died on Saturday, and we'll talk about her in a minute because I knew her very well and we were at Varsity together. For a while, she worked with us at Cliff Central too, so I was very sad to hear about her death on Saturday. And then this horrific story, I'd never met this woman, I never really knew much about her at all. But Nelly Tembe, who died over the course of yesterday, I think it was, falling to her death from the top of a building in Cape Town, just the most horrible, horrible story.
Yeah, there's still details that haven't really come out yet. And obviously there's a lot of speculation going around the Twitterverse, making up their own stories. but the details so far, I can't give complete credibility to them, but this is what's going around, is that they were in a club called the Pepper Club, which is on the 10th floor of a building on the corner of Lerp Street in Cape Town.
Yeah.
Lerp and Basenkracht, perhaps.
Yes.
And she was found, the body of a 22-year-old woman was found on the street, and it's presumed that she'd either jumped or fallen to her death.
Good God.
And apparently, you know, her fiancé is completely shook up about this and absolutely
fiancé,
distraught.
By the way, the fiancé is AKA. We haven't even mentioned that.
Yeah.
That's how, you know.
So obviously investigations continue, and inconsolable, yes. And the thing is just recently they got engaged and were sharing very happy photos of themselves on Instagram. So it's really sad.
How dreadful. What a crappy year 2021 has been in terms of all of this. I mean, we really, you know, and we don't take death too seriously on this show because we have like the death pool and all of that stuff, but it just seems that there's quite a lot of this going around. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine whose dad died at the beginning of the year, and he's just, it's so incredible because he's always been a really, really good guy, but he's developed this incredible attitude of I don't care anymore. Because he says when you go through something like that, you get perspective, you know, and then there are many of us who haven't really experienced that level of loss yet, and maybe we will, maybe we won't, but this, it just seems like, you know, in one weekend these four deaths, it's a lot to deal with anyway. Today, well, we could talk about all of them in a minute, and I wanted to talk about Dr. Cindy because I really thought she was a very special person. She and I were at university together. We actually were on campus radio together right in the beginning, and yeah, and she was born in Zim. Her parents were quite connected in Zim, and she came out to South Africa because she wanted to study here. She'd been to very good schools in Harare, and she was studying medicine. Obviously, she became a doctor. She was no slouch on the intelligence field. I mean, she was a really clever human being. My God, I mean, Cindy. I remember her having arguments with people, and she was fiery. Hey, she had this lovely, friendly, kind, gentle approach to things, and that's possibly why she would have been one of the the best doctors to those that did meet her in that capacity, because she really had that ability to connect with people. She was very emotional. She was lovely. She had a deep sort of sense of kindness and caring. And I remember, despite the fact that we lost touch for a year or two after university, we reconnected, and I went off and had coffee with her, and she told me about this white guy that she'd met called Marinus, and she wanted to get married to him. And I said to her, do you really want to go through all that shit? Because, you know, you have to deal with like all the cultural crap that comes with having a mixed marriage. And she's like, no, I love this guy. Anyway, they got married. They had two kids. And then later on, I connected with her again when we started Cliff Central. And we had Dr. Jonathan Witt doing a medical show. And he couldn't handle it because there was too much in terms of responsibility in being a doctor. And he said, listen, have you met this Dr. Cindy Fonsale? And I didn't immediately click. You know, because her surname had changed from the Cindy that I'd known. And when she came in, I mean, it was so funny because I hadn't seen her for a while. And she walked into my office and she was like, hey, Gareth. I was like, my God, Sins. And she ran over and gave me a hug. And I thought, wow, this is cool. I didn't know this is the Dr. Cindy that Witt was talking about. And she took over the show. And for a long time, she was doing that. And then, you know, she kind of got job offers from other places, and she had other things that she wanted to focus on, and she moved on. But I was so pleased and proud of the fact that we helped to re-engineer the Dr. Cindy that I always thought she was going to be our health minister, because she loved public medicine that much. You know, she worked so hard to help babies who were born from mothers who had AIDS. And babies who'd been born with AIDS, and she helped them with feeding schemes and helping them to get breast milk, because, you know, obviously with HIV/AIDS, you know, you don't want the child to be further disadvantaged by receiving, you know, HIV/AIDS milk and all the rest of it. She was very much involved in helping those mothers to feed and look after their kids, and she lobbied the minister, and she was really active. You know, she wasn't a slouch. Anyway, I was very sad to hear that she'd got so sick during COVID, and I heard that they'd run out of money to treat her because her medical aid, either she'd changed medical aids or they wouldn't pay, or there was a whole thing, and it was all over social media. And, you know, for whatever reason, people will criticize her, and I think, you know, people have the right to do this. It's probably quite insensitive when someone's died, but people were saying, oh, well, you know, she should know better as a doctor when it comes to medicine and medical aid, and that she was obese and all of this stuff. But whatever's happened has happened, and now there are two little children who are going to grow up without a mom, and there's a man whose heart's broken because he's lost his wife, and we feel like we've lost a member of our family, and that makes me very sad.
Well, over the past couple of weeks, it's been inspiring to see how people band up together. You know, we spoke to these guys on So What Now a few weeks ago, last season, and Sibi Mabena and Ayanda Mantombazane and Takis, who, after the university registrations and the protests around that, banded up together, did the social media hashtag, and collectively they raised more than 2 million rands that's going to go to university students who need to register. And similarly, over the past couple of weeks, people who have loved Dr. Cindy so much realized what she was going through with her medical costs and crowdfunding, you know, not with Dr. Cindy even asking or spearheading, but these are just people banding together.
Yeah.
And they raised, I don't know what the final figure was, I'm presuming it's even still continuing, but I know it was a little over 1 million the last time I saw it. And it's just testament to, you know, one's legacy. And I know maybe that's getting a little too airy-fairy, but legacy isn't about, you know, how philanthropic you were or what will be on your tombstone, but it's about your impact, what you do to people, how you make others feel, what people think about you, for people to be so committed to say, actually, we want to help you out so much, is awesome.
I mean, you know, this is one of the few places where like social media does a good job, and it occasionally does this.
Yeah.
We see the best of people, because most of social media is seeing the worst of people. So it's always it's nicer and it's more gratifying to see when people are doing something good together and something positive comes out of it. So, you know, to all those people who were donating money and spending their time trying to get other people to help as well, good for you. I mean, I'm sure that if Cindy was here now, she'd give that infamous giggle and she'd laugh and she'd say, for me, you know, that's what she was like. But yeah, yeah. I hate starting this Monday with all of this crap, but unfortunately, we suppose we have to deal with it, right?
It's life. Well, it's death, and it's what's happened.
My outlook on death and loss so much, it's 6 a.m. It's time for your daily Oprah reference. But it goes back to a husband who had lost his wife and appeared on the Oprah show. And in a few words, he said, and his wife was sickly for a while, and you know, he couldn't exactly cope with it, and he didn't want to exactly, and he was focusing on living and, you know, raising the kids. And he said his biggest regret was not leaning in and living 100%. He said it was sort of in this limbo state of, I want to be there for my wife, but then I'm also in denial that she's about to die and leave. And he now just wishes that he lived and felt everything 100%, like was with her to the end 100%, and just went on holiday 100% and was in the moment 100%. So my takeaway is, with any death, it should be a reminder to us right now to make the most of what we have, because we know it can change at any moment. So,
yeah. Well, yeah. If it gets us to do that, it's a good reminder. Anyway, yeah. how was the weekend? What did you guys get up to? Anything fun?
It was very relaxing. I knew that I had a difficult and busy week coming up. So, and I wanted to tackle some of the work to make the load lighter by Monday. Mm-hmm. But instead, I decided to just relax so that I didn't exhaust myself by the end of the week.
Oh, so
because we're still getting used to long weeks again.
Yeah, so you were actually planning to work. You were planning to work, and then you decided, screw that.
Yeah. When you just feel fatigued.
Yeah.
And you'd rather save all your energy so that by Wednesday it doesn't feel like Friday already.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. I actually had a pretty busy weekend, because on Friday night it was mostly chilled, but Saturday night I went out for drinks and dinner, and then ended up getting home pretty tired. Woke up Sunday morning, and this is in between all the kind of, you know, usual family stuff and all of that. Then on Sunday we went to some family friends, and they've got a pizza oven in the garden, and they actually made pizzas, which is so, I mean, listen, it's like such a good thing to be able to do. And you have to start the fire the day before, and, you know, you really have to build the thing properly. You need to know what you're doing, make the dough. And he does it all himself, and he made these magnificent pizzas for us. But we sat around from probably about 2 o'clock until 6 o'clock in the evening, just eating nonstop pizzas as they'd come out of the oven. They'd be put in front of us, and we'd all just help ourselves. It was so nice.
You caved basically with many hours of sitting.
So I'm going to have to spend the rest of this week trying to lose some of that weight, but we'll see how it goes. I've been doing well on that front, by the way. So I'm feeling like I'm definitely heading in the right direction weight-wise. I was maybe after yesterday's pizzas it'll change for the worse, but so far I've been feeling good about it.
Do you not get that smoky smell stuck on you in your clothes?
No. He was far away making the pizzas. We were sitting at the table. You know, it's like in my house, I separated the kitchen from when I built my house. There was the plan that the architect had proposed was this open plan thing, where, you know, it was kitchen, dining room, kind of all one space, living room. I said, no, this is going to change. I like the kitchen separate from the rest of the house. I like a door in between, and I probably would prefer not to be the one cooking 99% of the time too. So this is similar. There's a pizza oven at the far end of their garden, and he would make them and then someone bring them through. So that was good.
You actually get these, I watched The Block Australia, which is a what's it called?
It's like a home improvement. Renovation. Yeah, it's like a home improvement show, right? I've seen that.
But it's actually got so big now where they're building these massive three-story buildings. It's just really become, involved in like the next level.
Hmm.
But anyway, besides the point, instead of installing a pizza oven, if you're looking at space issues or smoke issues,
yeah,
you do get these outdoor, they look like UFOs. They're these like, but very modern and sleek.
Yeah.
Almost like more round and pretty than a UFO. but I love the way we talk about it as if UFOs actually exist.
Yeah.
But these are little mini ovens that are built in. And yeah, it's becoming quite fashionable in Australia to replace your Barbie with a sleeker pizza oven, although not good for calories.
Listen, you can cook. Sure. Apparently, you can make some really good stuff in a pizza oven. You can do like the most incredible slow cooking of pretty much anything. And it's incredible because you put the wood inside and then you have to heat the bottom of it. That's the whole plan. It's like the floor of the oven has to be really hot according to the people who know these things. Not me.
I just have this irrational fear with them.
What's the irrational fear? That you're going to be thrown in like Hansel and Gretel? What was it? No? Was it Hansel and Gretel who threw the witch into the fire? It was.
Yes.
I don't know why I think this, but the couple of times I've been around them, I just think this heat is just going to like sear my eyebrows off. It is
that's
irrational.
What you're worried about?
I don't know where it comes from. I just see the vision of this loud, this large puff of smoke coming towards me. And then wake up later with no eyebrows.
If it was that dangerous, restaurants wouldn't allow little kids to sit behind the counter and make their own pizzas. Yeah.
Yeah,
maybe you should try
to
that.
Use logic here. Mm. No.
No, build up.
Mm.
Imagine me with no eyebrows. Oh.
So we were talking about Prince Philip, but there's actually an island in the South Pacific where the people there worship Prince Philip. I mean, they thought he was a god. It was like they were a cargo cult, and you know, those cargo cults are these very disparate and very isolated islands of people who really only saw the only time they interacted with the outside world until very recently. And there still are, I think, like the North Sentinel Islands or whatever it is in the Indian Ocean. There are still these places, but they used to be very much isolated. And when a ship would come and they'd see these people who came off the ships, I mean, it must have been fairly terrifying, you know, if you've lived on an island and you've never had anything to do with anyone. And then these big machines pitch up and, you know, they send crates of stuff to the shore. So Prince Philip and his boat, like at some point in the 1930s or even during the war, I think he landed on one of these islands and they thought he was a god. And, you know, he was this tall, blonde, blue-eyed European, and they obviously were very different, and he came and he landed on the island and he, I don't know, distributed medicines or whatever it was that he did, and they thought he was a god, and they continued to worship him until right now. And in fact, they're probably the most broken up, aside from the royal family themselves, about the death of Prince Philip. So they are going to now spend the next week or two wailing uncontrollably over the death of Prince Philip. And it's so bizarre. I mean, this shows you how, you know, it's possible to have influence well beyond the normal place.
Jeez.
This is particularly the remote island of the South Pacific island of Tana. And this, we can call them, I guess, a cult, are called the Prince Philip Movement. And they solidified themselves back in 1974 when Prince Philip actually visited the island.
Oh, is it that recent?
And they connected the fact that Prince Philip was this living embodiment of an ancient story that existed on the island, of the fact that there will be a legend of a son who marries, or a son of a mountain spirit who marries a very powerful woman. So when Prince Philip arrived, married to the queen, they're like, huh,
Must be him.
Well, you are yeah. the chosen one.
Listen,
absolutely.
I'm more inclined to follow that religion than many of the others we know. But that sounds the most sure. the most true.
It sounds it sounds actually
so like it's very discords, but
quite sensible.
yeah.
And Prince Charles once visited the island. He visited back in 2018. They weren't as enamored by him as they were with Prince Philip, but
maybe Prince Philip should have been more ceremonial when introducing his son, like holding him up like baby Simba.
Yes. Simba, yeah.
But they gave Prince Charles an honorary chief position.
Yes.
So it is now assumed that now that Prince Philip is gone, that Prince Charles will be worshipped as a god as well.
Well, I saw that all of their children have been making tributes of some kind or another over the last couple of days. That's Prince Charles, Princess Anne, Andrew, and then Edward. All of them are just saying things about their dad. And, you know, it's sometimes tough to remember that these are also people. They're not just the institutions or the office bearers of these very ancient and privileged positions in society. That, you know, he was a dad, and he might not have been, you know, the kind of hands-on father that I suppose a lot of us look at as a good example these days, but he was sort of also mostly in responsible to the Queen and having to look after her and be her supporter during all of the years that she's been Queen. I wonder how she feels.
It's almost as if he knew his place, but in a good way. Mm. You know, he knew what role he had to fulfill, and he did it. Mm. He did go above and beyond in the ways that you've mentioned and being modern, but he never tried to push for more in his role or in his label or stature.
Absolutely. I read a really interesting article, which there was a line in it that made me think. Let me just read this to you quickly. It's from Unheard. They called him the Prince of Nowhere because he was born in Greece, of Danish ancestry, moved around. His dad was, you know, he died in the south of France with his mistress. His mother went to a sanitarium because she went mad. But they said this, which I thought is really interesting. Towards the end of his time on Earth, Philip came to have that rare cursed honor of having his life dramatized in his own lifetime. The crown, covered with great social change, the period also reflected it. The modern monarchy had been established by George V, who, with his radio broadcasts, kept the House of Windsor on the throne by making them celebrities. Yet it relied on a culture of gentlemen's agreements and shame among editors and journalists. And then they say this is really, really interesting. Let me just find this part about Princess Diana and the kind of contrast there. Yet many of us... Yeah, sorry. This is where I think his legend status came from. In the 1990s, there was a great divergence in how we dealt with mental anguish. We were now supposed to open up and show our feelings, even if we didn't want to. Philip got through everything by making a joke of it and by being practical. Nothing better illustrated this great emotional divide than the tragic death of Prince Philip's daughter-in-law, Diana, after which the Queen and the Duke's emotional restraint felt dangerously out of touch, and the tabloids demanded that they cry publicly to join the wailing crowds outside. Yet many of us felt this was not emotional liberation, but emotional tyranny. Some people get through hardship and trauma by very public displays of emotion. Others do it by focusing on the practical. It doesn't mean that they're not hurting. From an early age, Prince Philip endured his fair share of grief. He just got through it by making plans and doing something useful. Isn't that interesting?
I like
that.
Yes. So I hope they stick to his wishes and his plans of just something very low-key and the service being small and not big pomp and ceremony.
Yeah.
But I was also surprised, to make the connection that he passed away on Prince Charles and Camilla's wedding anniversary.
Mm. Oh, that'll
That'll be a day that's a little weird.
Imagine Charles waking up and going, Camilla, happy anniversary. And then a couple of hours later, it was a rather sad day after all, isn't it? Anyway, all right. So that's just catching up on the weekend. There's also plenty of other stuff we've got to get to. And by the way, John Hunt will be with us later on. You know John Hunt, the advertising guru. He's written a new book, and we had him on when he wrote his last book. This one's called You Never Really Know. And it's a novel, and it's a really fun story. I mean, I've only just started it, but I thought it would be a good idea to have John on. And we're going to talk to him about his book. We'd like to hear from you. You can get hold of us on 079-748-2090. That's the WhatsApp line. And I see lots and lots of people there too. But if you want to just message us on YouTube, you can do that as well. So that's very, very cool. Let us know what's going on in your mind, in your weekend.
And, or in your mind.
Or in your mind, if you're, you mean you might have nothing going on in your mind.
If you want to delve really deep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Ruth says that Philip's mother wasn't mad. They didn't realize she was partially deaf and became a nun and is buried in Israel. Yeah, but she did have mental health issues, which in those days were not taken seriously at all. And it's quite right that she couldn't hear properly. And she did become a nun. She's buried in Jerusalem, actually. But, I mean, just such a messy childhood for Philip. You know, all the things that we say you absolutely should have. When you're growing up, he didn't. He was sent to these really strict schools. There was a guy called Kurt Hahn who was in charge of the school at Gordonston that he went to. They would make them have cold showers every morning, and you know they'd have to endure all kinds of physical labor and deprivation, and it would toughen them up, and they'd be real men. And when I think of like my grandfather's generation, that was the kind of thing that they prized above all else. Now we think it's important to give children lots of love and to give them all the resources they need and to make sure that they're never uncomfortable and that no one can trigger them and that they have to be looked after and cotton-wooled and shepherded through life and live with their parents well into their 40s. And obviously, you know, his generation thought exactly the opposite. I mean, he didn't have a relationship with either of his parents for most of his life. So you can see the contrasts there as well. It's amazing how stuff has changed, eh? Sure. I mean, like,
yeah, and how it's gonna change the face of the earth forever.
Yeah.
By the decisions we're making now on raising children, it'll affect everyone for generations to come.
But it does also swing. Like, it goes from one extreme to the other. There was, you know, there was a time where you know it was considered really good parenting to just keep the children quiet and stay out of the way, and they can maybe join you at the supper table when they're 15 or whatever, and you'd maybe talk to them for 3 minutes a day.
Not heard.
Yeah, and you talk to them for like 3 minutes a day, and that was enough. And you certainly didn't pick them up and hug them. And then you had the opposite extreme where the kids rule the roost, you know, and you've got a 5-year-old basically telling everyone else what to do in the family, and you know, kids can do no wrong, and they have to be treated like gold. And that's just one extreme to the other. I wonder where we'll end up and whether both aren't as bad as each other and there's some kind of happy medium. That it's funny, I had a conversation with someone over the weekend too about kids and, you know, whether or not I ever want to have kids and things. And we've discussed this a couple of times on the show. But man, is that a minefield. I have such respect for parents. Even if you're a horrible parent, it's hard. I mean, it's really hard. How do you know you're a horrible parent? You probably don't. You think you're okay. Or you're one of those people who's always concerned that you're not doing enough. So even if you're doing a great job, you're like, oh my God, that's nerve-wracking, and I'm so scared and I'm so anxious, and what do I do here? And am I doing this right? And you know how it goes.
Or you've done everything right and you've just given birth to devil spawn, and nothing that you could have done would have changed. Would have changed the child.
Yeah, that's possible.
And you're punished for the rest of your life.
I've met some little children who are absolutely, I'm convinced, are devil children. Convinced. You know what you
I
did.
Don't blame you. Oh. Even just in general, over the weekend while I was still at home, there was a point where it was on Saturday morning, and it is a luxury. I define it as a luxury for us to be able to wake up without an alarm.
Totally.
Weekends are for that. And my niece and my nephew were making noise, and they were awake very early, and they knock on my door, open the door and they barge in to see if I'm awake. I was awake at the time. What did I do? I just pretended to be asleep.
Oh, good work. Yeah, that's nice.
Very,
that's
very, very good. Still. Then they gave a moment and then they ran out again. So children are something else.
Well, I mean, listen, I totally understand your decision to pretend that you were asleep. Weekends are for sleeping. Yeah. Weekends are for sleeping in and nothing else. I wish I had today to sleep in a little bit extra. I feel like I was deprived. But let's get into some headlines. Still no sign of money to top up the partial payment of SAA technical staff. You know, I don't know why we keep circling back to SAA, but the management of their technical team to work towards the improvement of partial payment of March salaries continued until Saturday morning, but were unfortunately unsuccessful. Employees were told that in a letter over the weekend. This was after meetings were held with unions on Friday. Apparently, SAA Technical is a subsidiary of the parent company, so it's not in business rescue. So they don't get paid. Exco will tirelessly continue to engage with the board and the shareholder to secure short and medium-term solutions. Basically, these people are owed money. It's not as if, you know, this is money that they're demanding that they didn't earn. And these guys are not paying them. So, again, SAA must just be shut down completely. They must take whatever money they can get from selling planes and pay people out, and let's start again. And then, I don't know if you know this, but it was 20 years this weekend since the Ellis Park tragedy. Do you remember that?
Wow.
It's amazing. I mean, you think of 20 years. 20 years ago is 2001. And that's scary to think about. That
in itself is scary.
I know. 2001 is 20 years ago. Anyway, 43 supporters were killed in a stampede at Ellis Park in Johannesburg in 2001 on this day. And it marks, obviously, the anniversary of that. Administrators, players, and coaches are reliving the memories, as well as families of people who were killed. And according to reports at the time, the stadium was packed to capacity. A further 30,000 people tried to force their way in. It was dubbed as the country's worst sporting tragedy, and it took place during a match between Orlando Pirates and Kaizer Chiefs all those years ago. So just a note, and to anybody who wanted to commemorate that, they had some ceremony yesterday at Ellis Park. Cyril Ramaphosa has called for unity in the ANC with alliance partners in memory of Hani. That's another anniversary. Chris Hani didn't allow himself to be captured by anything else and put the interests of his people above himself. Saturday, 10th of April, 2021 marks 28 years since Chris Hani was shot and killed by Janusz Walus outside his home in 1993 in Kempton Park. Ramaphosa spoke in Ekurhuleni during the commemoration of his death. The ANC and its alliance partners paid homage to the late struggle icon at his gravesite, and the event proceedings were led by the president, who described Hani as a selfless individual. Of course, he knew him, so he could say that. But it's amazing, all these commemorations, you know, in the news this morning, just those two, and both quite significant things that happened. Then further afield in Iran, they say their Aki Natanz nuclear facility was hit by sabotage. Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that, guys. I'm so sorry that Iran's nuclear facility has been hit by sabotage. What a pity.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, oh, no. So Ali Akbar Salehi did not say who was to blame for the terrorist act which caused a power failure at the Natanz complex south of Tehran on Sunday. Israeli public media, however, cited intelligence sources who said it was the result of an Israeli cyber attack. Israel has not commented on the incident directly, but in recent days it has ramped up its warnings about Iran's nuclear program. The latest incident comes as diplomatic efforts to revive a 2015 nuclear deal abandoned by the Trump administration have resumed. So we will see what happens. But that's interesting that, you know, it's just so unfortunate for them that they had this problem. Ha, ha, ha. And then Prince Philip, obviously in the news over the weekend, very much an international story. Along with my favorite rapper, DMX, our family member, Dr. Cindy, who was part of the Cliff Central team for a long time, and this horrible story about AKA's fiance, Nelly Tembe. All of those four dying over the weekend. We referred to them in the beginning half hour of the show. And then people obviously are starting to pay tribute to Prince Philip. So among others, the Princess Royal, Princess Anne, described her father as a teacher, a supporter, and a critic. And she said he would leave a legacy which could inspire us all. And lots of other people speaking out, including politicians. Apparently, Boris Johnson came outside again, didn't brush his hair. I know that there's something.
Well, no one would recognize him if he did brush his hair. So he has to just keep up with it now.
Yeah, absolutely. So who the hell knows?
Boris. Every time I see him, it's the closest I get to my most animalistic and simplistic ways. I even just want to lick my palm so that I can lick some of the hair down. Oh,
like a mum.
Just
such a mess. Boris is such
a
mess.
At this point, I could even just lick my thumb and clean his face off a little.
Anyway,
get yourself together.
We're really, really sad about Prince Philip. He was so terrific top guy and, you know, life of service, life of duty. Anyway, going to brush my hair. But then I'll only brush it once you've already seen me. So don't expect to see me once it's brushed. Thank you. Bye-bye. Boris getting out of the way. All right. Oh, by the way, they're going to bury Philip on Saturday in St. George's Chapel. So for those people who are interested.
Which is the family chapel, really, and it's not going to be very public in that case, the actual ceremony.
Well, I don't know because, you know, again, there's this interesting contrast between the kind of guy that we think Philip was and the kind of guy he was. He thought it was a good idea to bring TV cameras into the royal family and to show off kind of their normal lives and let ordinary people see how they go about their business. And maybe, apparently one of the things that's going to happen that'll be quite interesting is he custom built a Land Rover for all kinds of purposes. And they're going to use this custom built Land Rover as the vehicle for carrying his coffin down to St. George's Chapel, which I think it's so cool. Instead of the usual gun carriage. Isn't that great?
Wow.
Well, because lest we forget, he was still driving frequently before, I think it was 97 when he got into that car accident and people were saying, okay, maybe.
It was 2017. And in fact, when the Obamas visited, when Obama was president of the United States, he picked them up and drove them back to the castle himself at Windsor. So he didn't at any stage, no one could tell him what to do. You know, he kind of did his own thing.
Remember, he crashed into that lady just recently.
Yeah. That was at Sandringham or something. All right. So those are the news stories that you need to know about this morning. And it's almost 10 to 7 already. It certainly is. It's getting darker and colder every morning. I notice now that we're back to, you know, starting the show sort of in the dark, which is a little bit scary. Mm-hmm. And before we know it, we're going to be in winter. A friend of mine was saying over the weekend that I've always said there are three things I like about winter, you know, getting into a warm bed at night when it's really cold. That's a nice thing.
Yes.
Number two is fires and fireplaces. Number three is vegetable soup. Those are the three things I like. He added a fourth one. He said he quite likes actually dressing properly in winter. You know, you could wear nice clothes in winter. You wear smarter clothes. You can wear more clothing. You can have nice jackets and coats and you wear boots.
Boots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And some people really like that. So let's try and find the silver lining, even though I suppose that if you're like me, you don't like winter at all. Not my favorite season. I'll take summer any day of the week, twice on Sundays. In fact, I want to be rich enough one day to only experience summer. I don't want to ever be stuck in winter. In other words, when it's warm here, I'll be there.
Yeah, northern and southern hemisphere.
Correct. Yeah, that's what I want to do. That's how I know. If I really
migrate.
Damn straight. By the way, Bitcoin is over $60,000 this morning. If you're waking up, there's some good news for you if you've got a little bit of Bitcoin. And if you haven't yet, why haven't you been buying small amounts like we've been telling you every week with Sean Saunders, you know, and even before that? With Run and everybody else telling you, you've got to get in here on this Bitcoin thing. $60,000 a Bitcoin from this morning and Ethereum at $2,157. So interesting stuff to stay on the front of, right, at the leading edge of. I know Leanne has got some information for us on Namibia, of all things. Now, I mentioned last week that like a member of the extended family is going on this bike trip to Namibia. And Namibia seems to be in the news quite a lot. I met someone who's from Namibia a couple of days ago. So why is Namibia the flavor of the moment? Is it because it's the only country we can travel to?
Yes. Well, I mean, they are one of the only countries that's open to international travel. And what's really great for us is that, or people as travelers, is that it's really cheap at the moment. So you can have a really good, solid visit through the wilderness or the desert and have these amazing experiences where I know that we've been isolated, but you can go to these places where there's virtually no one else. You get put up in these, you know, luxury tents where it's just you as far as the eye can see. And I think just a lovely place to, I know that kind of scares Sia, but it's a lovely place to reflect and to just let go of everything that's been going on in our lives. And these holidays that were previously, you know, not for everybody because they were expensive, are dirt cheap now, and it's just getting everything going again, and I really support it.
I've never been to Namibia. I'd really like to go. So I've been to Botswana briefly a couple of times and to Zim, and I have been to Maputo. So I've done three of our six different borders. Because we've got Swaziland I've been to as well. So I've been to Swaziland, haven't been to Lesotho, haven't been to Namibia. But the others, all the other countries that are our neighbors, I've been to. And I'd love to go because I believe it is absolutely magnificent. And there are places there that are so naturally beautiful. And, you know, if you are going to plan a trip, that's probably got to be near the top of your list. And according to some of the airlines, we may eventually be flying internationally again quite soon. It's not necessarily going to take too long, so we'll have to see. Obviously SAA should not join. SAA should not join that because Carl says here, if SAA was a dog on its deathbed, it would be inhumane to keep it alive. Can we just shoot the thing in the fucking head already?
I see Emirates.
No,
on the
Carl,
other
tell
hand.
Us how you really feel.
Emirates is digging in. They're very good at their PR, you know, and these stints and keeping the airline brand and persona alive, even though it's a difficult time. And they've just had this huge ceremony and celebration of inviting a number of people on board one of their very special planes to take a special flight, mm-hmm. during which they're all being vaccinated. And it's also to show that the staff and pilots and everyone else are all being vaccinated as well. So, yeah, they keep themselves relevant all the time.
Good.
Somehow, through sponsorships and
let's get
PR.
Back to normal ASAP, please.
Emirates is sort of...
ASAP. SAAP.
Emirates is sort of pegging that by the 22nd of April, they'll be welcoming South African passengers onto their airlines. Let's see.
Good.
Don't really hold your breath.
Good, because we got labeled with that SA variant. Like, people all over the world were saying the South African variant, it was the worst version of coronavirus. Meanwhile, those same people had a problem calling it the China virus, like Trump did. So I don't see why we should get punished, but China gets a pass. Anyway, all right, so a couple of comments here. Tracy says that she went to Namibia, and she said the Fish River Canyon, the Ghost Town, Skeleton Coast, Etosha, and the Okavango Strip are beautiful. Can't wait to go again. Abso-bloody-lutely. An Auxy head whose name we still will never pronounce properly, no matter how many times they tell us. I've been to Zim and Namibia this month, this week in Johannesburg, and next week Botswana. I'm traveling. Yo, that is a lot of travel, man. Wow. Mm-hmm. Jared says, always wanted to take Rovos Rail through Namibia. It looks incredible.
Oh.
Do they do that? Rovos Rail to Namibia? Wow.
I don't know, but that sounds amazing.
Oh, that would be cool.
Really?
If that, Jared, yeah. I think they go to the Victoria Falls and they go to Cape Town, but I'm not sure if they do Namibia as well. I stand to be corrected. So, you know, if I'm wrong, then let me know. And then an old racist statue says, "I'll always remember Prince Philip as an outstanding member of the Hitler Youth and a terrific Nazi." Now, that is so unfair because the guy actually ended up fighting the Nazis in World War II, which is probably more than you did, an old racist statue. And
these names, I can't.
That's an actual person's name, according to, you know, what you decide you want to be called. Lots of comments on various people who've died over the weekend, which we've discussed. And if you're excited about international travel, where's going to be the first place you want to go? I mean, where would you really like to go, considering how much the world has changed? Are the places on your list exactly the same places that you wanted to go to before?
No, I'm sure. I'm sure they'd be completely different. Just talking again about this Namibia thing, how it's a little bit of a controversial thought to want to be completely alone and isolated. I think a lot of people want to feel the busyness and bustle of big cities. So perhaps places like Bangkok or New York would be on their list.
Yeah,
if everything was open again.
Well, I mean, you mentioned Namibia, so that would have moved up a few places on my list. But there are places that I have always wanted to go to that I'm now not so sure I'd be as excited to go to, not for a little while. And I have to say also, I've mentioned this before, I'm not in a hurry. If we still have to wear masks on planes for hours at a time, I don't know that I'd be so excited. I think I'm prepared to wait until we don't have to wear the damn thing.
How long does that wait? We just don't know.
No idea. No. Anyway, all right. So lots of other things to get into this morning. Leanne has some info for us, which she'll share with us after 7, about what age you're probably at the happiest you'll ever be. They've done some research.
Sorry for you if you've passed the age.
Right. So Leanne's going to let us know, at what age do you think you would be the happiest? So that's coming up. Very, very exciting.
But you're probably happiest at 3 when you don't know anything about having to earn a salary and pay taxes. And
so, yeah, have you seen how many times three-year-olds cry and throw their heads against the wall?
Have you ever seen a three-year-old happy because they have a set of keys to play with?
Yeah, so it may have passed us, but we'll find out from Leanne just now. So get ready. Strap yourself in for that. And we'll talk to John Hunt about his new book and find out how your weekend was. If you want to get hold of us, 0797482090. Tell us what's going on and how your weekend was, what you got up to. And then we can also communicate on the comments on YouTube, however you would like to let us know. CliffCentral.com.